Thank you very much for joining me for this 10 to 15 minute mini shiur. We'll be learning the book of Yehoshua, God willing, in daily installments for the merit of the soldiers of the IDF, as well as the hostages, as well as the wounded, and everybody who is in the line of fire in Eretz Yisrael. So my plan for going through Sefer Yehoshua is to blend, on the one hand, a close read of the text itself, the psukim themselves, with discussion of overarching concepts. Sefer Yehoshua is a fascinating sefer. It's fascinating in terms of Yehoshua himself, you know, the task that he has of taking over for Moshe, which is just, you know, unimaginable. It's also our first extended look at Eretz Yisrael, what we got with, you know, the Avos and the Imahos, the early parts of the Torah, and their lives in Israel was really just a set of snapshots. It's also the first steps of the Jewish people in their own land. And the story of the Jewish people is no longer being told based on a single figure, Abraham, Sarah, Yosef, Moshe, but now it's based on the experiences of the nation as a whole, and we'll see multiple plot lines interweaving as a result. You also see here something that's just a very interesting political issue. How do you apply the central authority that you had in the Midbar, in the wilderness, to a diffuse population spreading out in a new land? And that plays out in Yehoshua, and it goes on in Shoftim, and so on. Certainly, this book is more than just history. You know, you think back to the beginning of the Chumash, and the classic Medrash from Yalkut Shimoni that Rashi quotes at the start, asking, why does the Torah begin with Bereishis and all these stories? Why doesn't it just start in Parshas Bo with the first mitzvah in the Torah? And the Medrash there says, because Koach Masav Higid Le'amo Laseis Lehem Nachlas Goyim, quoting a pasuk from Tehillim, that Hashem spoke of the power of his deeds to give that to his nation, to give them the portion of nations. So Rashi takes that as a statement that Bereishis through Parshas Bo is meant to be history, so that we understand that Hashem created the world, and the reason why we get Eretz Yisrael is because Hashem gave it to us through the sequence of stories. It's history. But Ramban takes it as moral instruction. He says we're supposed to learn lessons from those stories, not just to know the facts of how we got Eretz Yisrael, but to understand what Hashem likes and what Hashem does not like, what Hashem rewards, what Hashem punishes. The same is true for the book of Yehoshua. We can read it as history. It's a record of events. But there's so much more that's actually going on here. You know, there's a Gemara in Nedarim, Daf Chaf Beis Amud Beis, in which Rabbi Chanina says, "El Malei Chatu Yisrael, had the Jews not sinned, Lo Nitan Lahem El Hamisha Chum Shei Torah V'Sefer Yehoshua Bilvad, all we would have received were the Chumashim and the book of Yehoshua. That's it. She'erka shel Eretz Yisrael hu, because this book records the value of the land of Israel, and therefore we would have it. And that would have been it, you know, consistent with an idea that Rav Kook expresses in Orot, where he says that had we not created the Egel, the golden calf, the nations living in Israel would have been so impressed with our spiritual greatness that they would have become Gerei Toshav. They would have accepted the Noachide laws, and that would have been it. No war would have been necessary. We wouldn't have needed to fight all the battles that we fought. That would have been it. We come in under Yehoshua. Maybe we come in under Moshe, for all I know, and everything is wonderful. My point now is not to talk about the sins that dragged us down, but to say, the Gemara Nedarim is telling us this book is about the value of Eretz Yisrael. And so it has that level to it. It's also the values of a nation. It's also the evolution of a leader. So much is going on here. So we're going to go through Sefer Yehoshua bit by bit. Now, this is a book that's basically prose. There is a poem in the 10th Perek. There are lists of kings who get defeated, but it's basically prose. And the themes in it are the nation following God's commands or making a mistake and not following, and taking the land and settling it and building out a society. The Gemara Bava Basra, Tezvav Amud Aleph, tells us that Yehoshua writes the book. It asks, well, the book records Yehoshua's death at the end. And so they say, yeah, because after Yehoshua, Elazar, the son of Aharon, was still alive, and he wrote more. But then it says that he died. Yeah, and so after that, Pinchas wrote more, and we know Pinchas appears in the book of Shoftim, so Pinchas clearly survives Sefer Yehoshua, so he's able to write it to the end. It is a little bit difficult, because if you were to look in Yehoshua Perek Yates, chapter 19, sentence 47, you will find a reference to a war that does not occur until the book of Shoftim. And Rashi there says, yeah, there are conquests recorded here that are certainly after the time of Yehoshua. Maybe, you know, Rashi will simply say, well, that's what Pinchas writes, because Pinchas is indeed alive later on. Abarbanel has a different view in his introduction to Navi. Abarbanel says that you see the phrase ad hayom hazeh, that such and such happens or is in a particular place until this very day. And he says that indicates that Yehoshua was compiled later, possibly from segments written by Yehoshua, but there's somebody later on who is compiling it, and eventually, of course, Anshe Knesset HaGedola include it in Tanakh. But keeping in mind this idea that Yehoshua is the author, let's take a look at the opening sentence of the book. Vayhi acharei mos Moshe eved Hashem. It was after Moshe, servant of God, passed away. I'm going to come back to that eved Hashem. Vayomer Hashem el Yehoshua bin Nun mishareis Moshe lemor. Hashem said to Yehoshua bin Nun, the servant of Moshe, dot, dot, dot. Now, Yehoshua is the author, right? Look at what he does. He positions Moshe as Eved Hashem, servant of God, and himself as Mishareis Moshe, servant of Moshe. So what he's telling us is, and Hashem spoke to Yehoshua, who was the servant of Moshe. So what he's doing really is establishing his legitimacy based on Moshe's legitimacy. I am a continuation. I'm not something new. Moshe served God, I served Moshe, and now, I think, what is it called, the commutative principle, property, something like that? You know, I now become the servant of Hashem. Hashem now is speaking to me, to Yehoshua. The Gemara seems to pick up on that. And this is the Gemara in Yuma, Daf Ayin Hei Amud Beis, the bottom, over onto Ayin Vav Amud Aleph, 75b, at the bottom, where they talk about the man, and they quote a pasuk from Tehillim, Lechem Abirim Achal Ish, the bread of the mighty, the Ish, the man, ate. Right? It's Tehillim chapter 78. So the Gemara there says that Ish here, man, in this sentence, refers to Yehoshua. And it says the man descended for Yehoshua and therefore for everybody else. It's a remarkable statement. The man descended on behalf of Yehoshua, and because of Yehoshua, it also came to everybody else. What's remarkable about it is that we know the man is in Moshe's merit. The Gemara says that elsewhere. The man is because of Moshe. So now what we're saying is after Moshe dies, the man continues for the Jews for some time. We'll see how long eventually, God willing. But it's in Yehoshua's merit. What Moshe had is transferred to Yehoshua. The reason they say that Ish, man, there refers to Yehoshua, the link they make is because when Hashem tells Moshe Yehoshua is going to be the next leader, he calls him Ish in Bamidbar chapter 27 in Parashas Pinchas. Okay, so Yehoshua is saying, and the Gemara picks up on it, that his legitimacy is an outgrowth of Moshe's legitimacy. Moshe served God, I serve Moshe, Hashem is now talking to me. Hashem talked to Moshe, now he's talking to me. Who is Yehoshua? So we know Yehoshua has been training with Moshe for 40 years, right? Yehoshua's debut appearance in the Torah was the war with Amalek, the end of Parshas Beshalach, when Moshe assigned him, took him out of the tent and said, okay, I need you to take care of the battle. When Moshe went up to receive the Torah, he went up the mountain and Yehoshua went part way up the mountain. Yehoshua was not left in charge of the people. That was Aaron and Hur. But at the end of Parshas Mishpatim, we find that Yehoshua goes part way up the mountain as Moshe's student. We are told also in Parshas Kisisa, after the Egel, after the golden calf, Yehoshua never leaves Moshe's tent. So this is all year one, right? This is year one, and Yehoshua is already the general assigned by Moshe. He is, at this point, enough of a student that he goes partway up Har Sinai, and he's never leaving Moshe's tent. Then, of course, we get the story of the Meraglim and Moshe giving Yehoshua a special name change, get special treatment from Moshe when he goes to Israel as one of the spies in Bamidbar chapter 13. And, of course, in Parshas Pinchas, he is anointed to become the next leader of the Jews, reiterated in Parshas Vayelech. Yehoshua is a scholar. He is the student of Moshe. That automatically makes him a scholar. He's not Moshe's equal, right? The Gemara in Bava Basra talks about him being like the moon. Moshe is the sun, and Yehoshua is the moon. He's reflecting Moshe's glory. He doesn't have all of it, but he's still Moshe's student. He is described in Parshas Baaloscha as Moshe's student, Mibichurav, which you could read as from his young students. But Ibn Ezra says, and Chizkuni brings it, it means from his select students. He is his choicest student. And of course, he's described as being filled with wisdom at the end of the Chumash. He is a Navi. He is a prophet. We find in the beginning of Yehoshua chapter 20, Hashem speaks to Yehoshua using a phrase he only uses with Moshe, and this one case with Yehoshua, never with anybody else. Vayedaber Hashem el Yehoshua lemor. Hashem spoke to Yehoshua, We're told that Yehoshua has the spirit of Hashem in him. He gets the title at the end of Sefer Yehoshua of being the Eved Hashem, servant of God. In the beginning of the book, he's Mishareis Moshe, servant of Moshe. But in chapter 24, he will be described as the servant of God. More on that if we get there. Yehoshua has a shira, a poem, in chapter 10. That's something that's usually associated with prophecy. Yehoshua has quasi-king status, interestingly. Remember that he is a descendant of the Nasi of Ephraim, Elishama ben Amihud, according to Divar Hayamim Aleph, chapter 7. Yehoshua is a student of... descendant of Elishama ben Amihud. In chapter 1, we're going to see in Pasuk Yud Ches, sentence 18, the people are going to say to Yehoshua, anybody who disobeys you shall die. It's a really striking statement. The Rambam picks up on that in Hilchos Malachim, chapter 1, Halacha Gimel, Perek Aleph Halacha Gimel, and he's describing the powers of a king, and he says specifically, he says, Ein ma'mid in melech patchile el al pi bezin shel shivim zekenim v'al pi navi. He says, you can't set up a king other than with a court of 70 elders and a Navi, like Yehoshua, who was appointed by Moshe and his Beis Din. So Yehoshua is identified as a Melech, and that's also seen in chapter 3 in Hilchos Malachim, where they talk about this power that Yehoshua has, that anybody who disobeys him will be put to death. That makes Yehoshua a king. Yehoshua is also a good military strategist. We know that that Moshe wants a courageous military leader to replace him. It's one of the things that he says, that Moshe says to God before Yehoshua is selected. There's a medrash in Bamidbar Rabba which actually says that Moshe chose Yehoshua to fight the war with Amalek because he wanted to train Yehoshua as a general, which raises the question, well, who trained Moshe? Nonetheless, that's Bamidbar Rabba Perachavav. And we see that strategy when Yehoshua starts fighting wars. He first conquers Jericho, which gives him the plains and a link to the communities on the eastern side of the Yarden, those that had remained behind. Then he turns to the city of Ai, and conquering that gives him the region of Har Ephraim, which is a very important region in Sefer Yehoshua and Sefer Shoftim. Then he goes to a war with Givon, and that takes him further west, the war defending Givon, and that takes him further west and curves south around Yerushalayim, surrounding Yerushalayim, so that Yerushalayim is now cut off from any allies it could have had along the Mediterranean coast, and it's surrounded by us on three sides. I don't know if you can visualize this, but they've now have the east of Yerushalayim, and they also have the south, and now the west of Yerushalayim. He conquers that area, and then after that he turns to the cities of the north. Worth noting that the Dat Mikra edition of Yehoshua actually sees Yehoshua as mimicking Avraham and his path of entry into Israel. There's more to say about Yehoshua, but I see I'm hitting the 15-minute mark shortly, so I'm going to stop there. And God willing, I'm going to pick up with that and send more tomorrow.